listening to the Paul McGuire Report. I'm Paul McGuire. On today's program, wherever you're listening, on planet Earth or the USA or wherever, I want to talk about where our nation and society is going, specifically America, Western culture. But after what is coming hits America and then consequently hits Western culture, a tsunami hits the rest of the world, because America, it has nothing to do with virtue or whatever, America is the most powerful nation on Earth. And I've been finishing up the book like fiendishly. And one of the things, I did a sub-chapter today, and believe me, it's getting out. It's going to be mailed. For those of you that pre-ordered, I get tired of saying this on my part, because it's embarrassing to me. I'm not usually this slow. But just to re-explain, you know, I had basically finished the book when I started pre-ordering, selling as a pre-order. And then the world completely flipped upside down. And I looked at my book and I said to myself, I can't release Power from On High to my readers that paid for it, because it's out of date. I mean, the entire world had changed in 6 months to a year. And I couldn't leave all those essential, all-important truths out of the manuscript. I just couldn't do it in good conscience. Because My rule as an author, and you may think, well, that's a strange rule, I don't believe him. Well, that's between you and the Lord. My rule is not money first. Maybe it should be. Maybe things would be a lot easier for me if I did make the rule of money first. But that's not my rule. My rule is I pray to the Lord. I ask the Lord, Lord, what do you want me to write about? What do you want me to teach about based from your word, etc.? And then as the Lord begins to speak to me through his still small voice, a strong series of impressions begin to come upon me over a period of time. And it's people talking to me. It may be something I saw on television, a conversation, an experience I had, or whatever. But it all piles on top of one another. And then there's like a very strong burden to go with it, a very strong sense of divine mission that goes along with it. And then I feel I write a book based on what I feel compelled by the Lord to write. Now, I'll be honest with you. And when I first started writing, that was not the case. It wasn't that my only purpose was money, because, no, my only purpose was never money. If I wanted to make money, I would tell this to people, and some people are going to be offended when I say this, but you know, all you have to do is to take a particular genre in writing, like Stephen King novels. I would probably be very good at that. I think I'd be better than he is at it. But I'm not interested in selling my soul to be a best-selling author. And for me, it's not the content of what he writes. It's that if God has given you talents and you're using them to write things that he's not telling you to do, you're missing the mark, metanoia. Now, that doesn't mean you just have to write Christian books. Some people are called by God to write secular books. That doesn't make it any less spiritual than somebody who writes Christian books. The key is that whatever it is that God's telling you to do, whatever it is that God's putting in your heart, that's what you do. So, when I was writing this book, obviously we had the vaccinations. And it just turns out I had been writing on vaccinations for 35 years. You don't believe me? Write me. And No, you don't. You don't even have to write me. Just go to one of the publishers' pages, and they'll say publication date, which is the copyright the copyright date of when I wrote it. It'll be obvious. It's like a standalone proof. So I felt I needed to keep the original concept, which was power from on high, but then I had to make a critical decision. Do I just chuck that out the window? And the Lord, I felt the Lord saying, no, don't chuck that out the window. I gave that to you right on that subject. But what I want you to do, Paul, is integrate power from on high with everything that's going on in our world today. And then, the Lord will continue to talk to me. And it's not this chit-chatty, fluent little conversation, okay? It's a series of still small voices, impressions, etc. And what the Lord said to me is, I want you to integrate everything that I've been showing you and teaching you through your research for the last 40, 50 years. I want you to integrate all of that with what's going on now. And man, at first, I didn't completely comprehend what the Lord wanted. But then I realized everything that I've been writing about for 40 years has now reached a critical focus point. So let's just take one series of small chapters in the book. Everything that you're seeing going on now before your eyes is a product of the intention, the design, and the planning by, the days of Paul McGuire like holding back because I may offend somebody, I don't care anymore. I don't mean that to sound arrogant. Not everybody can do that, but you see, I don't care anymore. And I don't mean that arrogantly. It's simply this. I've spent 40 years or more researching, doing my homework. I'm going to put in the book the truth. Time is running out very quickly. So you have a choice. You can read my book and get offended, or somebody can get offended. And you know what? So be it. I put my head on the pillow with a clean conscience, because I did what God told me to do. And finally, I told the truth. And see, what's been happening in the last 2 to 3 years, it has magnified to such an intensity. And I don't take don't get me wrong, I don't take some kind of perverse delight in this. I seem to pick that up from some people in prophecy, not many, but some. Like they have a kind of perverse delight that the world is ending. I'm not delighting that the world is ending. It's going to be catastrophic if you're not ready. So I have written in the book, you see, nobody understands why all this is happening. And you have like zones of consciousness. You have about 50% of the American people, and that's in the book too, by the way. But there's a reason I didn't make these percentages up out of the thin air. About 50% of the American people have really don't understand that they are in what would be called by psychologists, they're in what you would be called a scientific trance state or a scientific mass hypnotic state. That's where their consciousness is. Now, in that 50% that are in a mass hypnotic state, an ever-increasing number of them are slowly waking up to the reality that they have been walking around in a hypnotic trance-like state that secular atheistic psychologists called mass formation. So then you have people in varying degrees of waking up. Now, all of us went through this. I went through it. You went through it. I mean, I'm talking about in my very, very early days, I was searching and searching, but I didn't understand it to the degree how deep the deception and to the degree of the deception that I had entered. I was always battling it. I was always reading books. I was always trying to find the answers. And eventually, you know, it paid off. I don't gamble, but the few times I have gambled, somebody out there is going to think, oh, he's got a gambling problem. When I say a few times, I'm talking about maybe three times in 30 years. So you go to a slot machine, okay, and I even forgot how it works. You put in the coins or whatever. And then, boom, all the coins come out. In my case, all the coins came out. So this was back a number of years ago. So I went. I just picked the state I was born in, which was Missouri, and I won $30. Okay. Well, it's not a matter of putting a bunch of coins in the slot machine and hoping it turns out. If you do the research, if you do studying, it's obvious to you that the conceptualization, the understanding, the perception, the comprehension that the average person, and very tragically to say, the average Christian, their conceptualization of reality is so off target and so delusionary that they have no real clue whatsoever as to what's going on. So when they hear somebody like me talk, you know, I'll get occasionally, some people are polite, I'll get, you know, comments, proverbial comments like, oh, is that a conspiracy theory? I'm talking about from professors of eschatology, professors of the Bible at seminaries. I mean, I'll speak to a packed room, not because they love me, but because they love the person who invited me. You know, I don't put up with it anymore. I'm polite, but I will answer the question in a very focused, calm manner. And I won't waste a whole lot of time with them, but I'll speak in a number of paragraphs which will irrefutably illustrate with facts why what I'm saying absolutely must be 100% true based on the facts, based, I hate to say based on the science anymore, because science is what they represent science as has become non-credible. But based on the history and the science and the technology and everything, the reality of what I'm saying is not even in dispute anymore. I mean, you can take any subject under the sun, and you really have to be related to the Jim Jones cult, you know, where they drank the Kool-Aid in Guyana or something, or you really have to be related to the Hale Bopp cult, you know, the guy, I just saw this thing on TV, on Marshall Applewhite, crazy as a loon. Because if you're aware, if you're paying attention, that's a big assumption, then it is crystal clear, obvious to you that all of these things are indeed true. So we could take, hypothetically, the category of vaccinations. So I don't claim to be a scientist. I don't claim to be a medical researcher. I don't claim to be a medical doctor. But let's just start with basic facts that any fifth grader could understand. Number one, by the definition of scientists and doctors, and even by the definition of those who are doctors that specialize in vaccines, it would be medically and scientifically impossible to continue on in the designation of this COVID vaccine. It is totally scientifically improper to continue to call it a COVID vaccine because the actual way it works has absolutely nothing to do with what a vaccine is. Now, it's something else, but based on science and medical research, it can't even remotely be qualified as a vaccine, because a vaccine has to operate according to certain principles and biological paradigms in order for it to be a vaccine. What people are getting is an injection of materials into their bloodstream, like graphene oxide and other things. But that in no way, shape, or form even remotely defines it in the category of a vaccine. And quite simply, without being, you know, a Nobel Prize, I'm not claiming to be anything I'm not. I'm not a doctor. And let's play it safe. Let's say I'll claim to have half a brain, not even a full brain. I'll claim to have half a brain. Okay? So if you have half a brain and it happens to be working, this vaccination that's being given out is not a vaccine. Not only that, it violates all the medical rules and standards and protocols that a vaccine must have in order to be a vaccine. So, for example, I don't know what the length of time is, but in order for, according to the government organizations like WHO and organizations like that, in order for a vaccine to qualify as a safe and tested vaccine, it has to have been in trial for a certain period of time. And off the top of my head, I can't remember whether it's just a year. I think it's far more than a year. But let's be safe. Let's say it's just a year. It has to be tested on the American public or the public for a minimum of a year, even though I think it's quite a bit more than a year. This thing that they're shooting people with or sticking it up their nose or whatever has not ever been tested for the period of time that was necessary by their own laws, rules, and regulations to meet the qualifications for a safe vaccine. I mean, they do more testing on an energy bar than they did on this thing. Now, the other thing is, based on the high percentage of very deadly results from people who did get the vaccine, would you say, I'm not going to answer it for you, would you say that the vaccine, according to the medical industry's own standards, would you say that the vaccine, according to the medical industry's own standard, qualifies to be safe and effective? Does it do the job? And I think any honest scientist, I'm not knocking all doctors. Doctors fit into different categories. We would like that all doctors, you know, operate according to certain high standards. But the fact of the matter is, doctors are like everybody else. They're scared of losing their jobs. Many of them know what the truth is, but they, you know, they got to pay their kids' college. They got to pay for their medical insurance. They got to, you know, they got bills and mortgages and everything else. And they're terrified of losing their jobs. Now, you may say, well, if they, you know, they shouldn't be. Well, that's the way people are. Okay. But among those, that group, there's a certain percentage of them. See, one thing I learned a long time ago, because I studied scientific mind control, propaganda, social engineering, advertising, and related fields. That's really a quirky thing to major in, don't you think? Why would I be led? I wasn't even a Christian back then, so I can't claim to have been led into that field of study. But as I look back upon my life in retrospect, I can only say that the Lord was leading and guiding my life before I was even remotely aware of that. Because why else would I have a dual major at the University of Missouri, which was altered states of consciousness and scientific mind control was part of altered states of consciousness, advertising was part of that, and then filmmaking. So the question is, I studied academically in a very high level things like persuasion, social engineering, psychological transformation, hypnosis, and all kinds of things from a scientific perspective. And I learned many things in that. I remember one of my first jobs, secular jobs, was for an advertising agency, and I learned all kinds. The guy who owned the ad agency taught me all kinds of stuff. But the point was, is that there was a principle in advertising, two principles of advertising he taught me. One was called the bandwagon effect, and the other was called I forgot exactly what it was called, but there's an advertising principle that works like this. If you are exposed repetitively to a relatively effective advertising message, whether it's cigarettes or Coca-Cola or a car or whatever, and they did many, many, many follow-up tests on this kind of advertising. You repeatedly hear the message every day selling you a product or service, and then you are exposed to it on a repetitive basis. Okay, so what the follow-up study was that even though when you were being interviewed in the follow-up study and you told the person interviewing you before they went to your home, you told the person interviewing you that the advertising that you watched for the last 6 months had absolutely no effect on you. It didn't persuade you to buy any service or product at all. It didn't work. The advertising didn't work on you. And the people were militant about it, that the advertising didn't work on them. So then they would take one or two of the research assistants to to test and verify to see if indeed the advertising message did have an effect or not on people. And it blew my mind when I heard this, and it blew their minds. What happened was, when they from the moment they opened the door to a person's refrigerator at their home, to the car that they had in the garage, or the pack of cigarettes they might have smoked, or anything else, what they discovered overwhelmingly is that even though a person claims to have disliked the TV commercial, even though the person hated the TV commercial, even though the person found the TV commercial offensive and boasted that it certainly doesn't work on me. So they measured the response by questioning the person exposed to the advertising, and people would just say overwhelmingly, this advertising doesn't work at all. It doesn't do anything on me. But when they actually got to the people's houses, what they discovered was that their refrigerator was packed with products based on the advertising commercials that they were deliberately exposed to. So this is what they discovered. Even though people claim with their conscious mind, even though they claim that advertising doesn't work on them, when they open the refrigerator or the garage to see the car or anything else they purchased or bought or whatever, what they saw overwhelmingly was that that was a false statement. What they saw overwhelmingly was that any of the people that were exposed to a particular product or service in an advertising message, that no matter what they said about the effectiveness of the ads, those ads had an overwhelmingly positive effect on the people, and those people actually, despite what they said, they actually did go out and buy those products, those services, enormously. And they had this thing very carefully orchestrated so there would be no mistakes. They bought the very products and services they said they would never buy, and they boasted it would have no effect on them. And that goes away. It went for, you know, candy bars. And so what was, you know, they'd show the test subjects videos of themselves that they secretly took and all kinds of stuff. And people would like swear that the advertising had no effect on them. Or you'd see them on video laughing and making fun of the TV commercials. But when they actually checked out what products these people bought, the reality was that they bought overwhelmingly and in large numbers the very products and services they said that they laughed at the commercials. So the point was, for every aspiring advertising student, the point was that advertising works, even if somebody's conscious mind is absolutely convinced that it does not work. The reality is that advertising overwhelmingly works. And then they explained why. And they said it's because what you have to understand about advertising is that advertising is aimed at or targeted towards the subconscious mind, not the conscious mind. So with your conscious mind, the effect is you're ridiculing the commercial. You're making fun of it. You're analyzing and saying you would never buy this product with your conscious mind. But they're missing the whole point, because the advertising message is targeted towards the subconscious mind, and the subconscious mind is actually sold on the product, and the subconscious mind will go out and buy that product or service enthusiastically. So once again, what they learned in the advertising business is you don't measure the effectiveness or the results of an advertising message, an advertising commercial, can never be measured or evaluated by what people claim to say about the product or political candidate or service. Who do they end up really buying the product or service or politician? That's the determination of whether it's effective or not. And so they found out time and time again that advertising is totally effective, even if the person is laughing the entire time and mocking the commercial. And over again, they'd have videotape and other measurements which showed over and over again people laughing, ridiculing, making fun of stupid commercials, but these stupid commercials were highly effective in bypassing the conscious mind and changing decisions, attitudes, behaviors in the subconscious mind. It's amazing, isn't it? And once you understand that primary theory upon which all advertising works, and this is the theory. All advertising is based on targeting or sending a message designed to impact, influence, and change the subconscious mind. Okay? Now, your conscious mind is your awake, rational, logical, linear mind. Your subconscious mind is making fun of the advertising commercial or the politician or whatever. But the proof of the pudding is that when it comes to time to make a decision, the person who has repetitively watched this commercial goes out and buys or purchases or spends money or votes on the message that their subconscious mind has been exposed to over and over and over again. Now, this also happens to be the scientific basis of all hypnotic programming. It happens to be the scientific basis for the way hypnotism works in general. Once you understand the basic dynamic of hypnotism, you also understand the basic dynamic of hypnotic programming, things like NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and many other transformational subconscious mind techniques. When you get the principle, you know why it always works. Okay, so this is the principle. In all hypnosis, you know, people say, oh, I'll never get hypnotized. And they're the first people to go into a hypnotic state. So the entire point here is that in the field of mind control, the field of social engineering, the field of hypnotic persuasion, social engineering, or whatever it is, it doesn't matter what the feedback that people are giving you regarding their conscious mind. It's having a powerful influence, and it is changing their choices and their behavior in the subconscious mind. And that's why it works. Because science has discovered that the technique of behavioral transformation, belief transformation, is based on a subconscious decision. Now, when you understand the full implications of this, and by that I mean when you think about this for a while, when you meditate on this principle for a while and think about it, that's how you get wisdom. That's how you get knowledge. You will be staggered and amazed at the massive and wide spectrum of just how powerful behavioral transformation is when it's targeted at the subconscious mind and the subconscious belief system. It is amazingly powerful. And just because people laugh at it and make fun of it does not mean it's not effective. All right, you're listening to the Paul McGuire Report. I'm Paul McGuire. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Paul McGuire Report. I'm Paul McGuire. It's very important to understand this subject matter because this subject matter gives you knowledge in one of the most important areas in life, especially living in the kind of society we live in America and in Western civilizations and all over planet Earth. The science of scientific mind control has grown exponentially over the last 40 years. Okay, so let's go back to the vaccination and COVID and hypnotic programming and advertising, because they're all related. Now let's review some very important principles that have to do with advertising, persuasion, social engineering, mind control, and what you believe and don't believe. And here's how it goes. There is no correlation between a person's intelligence, their IQ, how bright they are, how perceptive they are. There's no correlation. There's no relationship between how smart you are, how educated you are, how sophisticated you are. There's no correlation between that and how easy it is for you to be susceptible to scientific mind control, advertising, persuasion, social engineering, etc., etc. Now, there's another part of this that is equally important to understand. There is no difference in the amount and number of people who are very, very, very smart, who succumb to hypnosis and advertising, and there's no statistical correlation between the number of people who are very, very dumb and succumb to hypnosis and advertising and so on and so forth. So whether you're dumb or a genius, it doesn't impact your susceptibility towards being hypnotized and your susceptibility to you being programmed or being influenced by advertising. That's critical to understand because people in their everyday lives make the faulty assumption that just because they're talking to somebody who's really smart, this person is really a genius. This person is really smart. This person would never get fooled. So then you trust that person to make the right decisions in these kinds of areas because you falsely assume that they're very bright and they would never be fooled. But what the data says, there's no correlation between a person's susceptibility to being fooled, and their intelligence. And you really got to understand this. It's a critical thing to understand. Now, there's other things. another important principle in advertising and in mind control and in brainwashing is the principle of compartmentalization. And I have seen this work so many times, it is staggering. In the research that I do, et cetera, I get to interact with people oftentimes who are super achievers, super geniuses, very, very educated, very, very smart, highly analytical thinkers, and just generally really bright light bulbs on the Christmas tree. These people are sharp. And what I have been stunned to discover over and over and over again is that these really smart and intelligent people succumb to the influence of advertising, succumb to compartmentalization, succumb to all forms of social engineering and mind control just as easily as somebody who didn't get a high school degree. There is no relationship between how easily they are persuaded with propaganda, advertising, and things like that, and their intelligence or their academic degrees. There's no relationship. In fact, you will often find that in industries, whether it's the military industrial complex or any other kind of industry, you'll often discover that in industries where they're known for hiring the brightest, most perceptive, the sharpest, most intelligent people on earth, it's often the case that in these industries that only hire the very, very smartest people, what they have found time after time after time, again, is that people in these super genius industries are just as susceptible to compartmentalization and the influence of others as people who have no education. So what they've discovered on a continuous basis is that geniuses, really smart people, and industries and fields which attract geniuses and really smart people, they've discovered that the employees that work for those super genius companies are very easily fooled, very easily susceptible to propaganda and advertising and so on and so forth. And the reason is they may be, you know, super geniuses, but they are very, very easily fooled because it's easy to get them to compartmentalize. And what is compartmentalization? Compartmentalization is when you subconsciously divide your brain into different compartments. Okay? So a person that compartmentalizes, and we all compartmentalize, by the way, you divide your brain into different compartments, which means you can be, you know, a Nobel Prize winner, you can be a physicist, you can be a genius, you know, beyond geniuses. But in many areas in your life, you are unable to access that same high-powered, super genius level type thinking, awareness, perception and decision making, you're unable to transfer your super genius areas of your brain into the everyday aspects of your brain. So what these super geniuses do on a routine basis is they compartmentalize their thinking and their genius brain. They compartmentalize. So if they go to a car dealership, for example, and a slick salesman gets a hold of them, even they're in charge of the money and the financing of their high-tech company or whatever. Even though they're super geniuses at work, when they go into the car dealership, they are unable to access that super genius part of their brain. They compartmentalize, and they're easily taken advantage of. They easily spend way, way, way too much money for a product or service than they should. They're easily persuaded into buying all kinds of things that they don't need and the company doesn't need in terms of insurance policies, in terms of financing gimmicks and all kinds of stuff. They're easily exploited and taken advantage of because they compartmentalize. They're like, when it comes to the tasks of their job, they're a super genius. But that super genius area of their brain is separated from the other parts of their brain where they're just an ordinary person. And that's why it stuns people perpetually. Actually, it shouldn't, but it stuns people perpetually. Well, you'll have people in the intelligence agencies or the military industrial complex or high-level science and biology or high-level disciplines in financial investment, etc. But when they go into an area outside of their discipline, because they compartmentalize, they're unable to open up their genius compartment and take out their genius brain and use their genius brain for all the other areas of life. So you know, they become security risks for the Department of Defense. They become security risks for an intelligence agency. Because the guys or girls that they're really trusting on to make these incredibly intelligent, genius-like decisions, when it comes to other areas besides where they use compartmentalization to be a genius, they're acting like idiots, and they get taken advantage, and they're security risks, and they get conned by other spies. It happens all the time. Now, why am I telling you all this? I'm telling you all this so that you understand something that you need, I need, to get up to speed on. It's something we need to teach our children to get up to speed on. Because if you are deficient in this area, if you have a brain and a perception that goes into autopilot or goes into compartmentalization easily, you have an Achilles heel. You're vulnerable. You have a very, very dangerous weakness that somebody, if they wanted to, could take advantage of and destroy you. And so the way you win at this is you don't enter the land of make-believe and pretend that you don't have a deficit or an Achilles heel. That's not how you solve the problem. You admit, you know, you have a conversation with yourself or your wife or husband, if you can trust them, and you admit, you know, honey, or let's do it where the honey, the woman, is talking to the man. That'll just be easier for me. Let's do it that way. Because I know the egos of men. So it'll be more amusing to me. So a wife who's very savvy and very smart. Now, she is not very savvy and very smart in the sense she doesn't have all the degrees. She doesn't have the high-powered job dealing with classified material, et cetera, that her hubby does. She's just an ordinary housewife, but she's smart and she has common sense. And she doesn't compartmentalize. So this is what she says to hubby. You know, honey, I understand that, you know, you're one of the brightest guys in your industry. You're known as a genius by just about everybody. And you could pay big bucks because you're really, really smart. Okay, so that calms the guy down. He can breathe normally because, you know, she massaged his ego. But now, being very smart, but not wearing it on her lapel button, she says to hubby, but hubby, you know, when we go down to the car dealership, can you allow me to do the negotiating? And the guy gets all offended. She says, because whenever you happen to do the negotiating, we always pay more for a particular car than any of our friends do. And we buy all kinds of add-ons that we'll never, ever use. And so she continues to be persuasive, and she persuades him to let her do the negotiating. And then he gets his ego. This is bothering his ego. Now, why aren't you trusting me? Because, you know, I'm one of the smartest guys in the entire field of high-tech startups, you know, in the whole world. So why are you doing the negotiating for the car and I'm not? He's annoyed. His ego's in the way. He can't see it accurately because his ego's there. So she says to him, honey, you are one of the smartest guys in your entire industry. And I may not have the degrees and the fancy title and the high-paying job, she says to him, but guess what, honey? I do the shopping for the family once a week. I balance the checkbook. When you're not here, I'm the one who has to deal with the cable companies and the cell phone companies and all the other stuff. And it's my job to stay on top of all this stuff. So all I do all day long, every day of the week, is I negotiate and I deal with people that are kind of adversarial. And over the years, darling, I've become very, very good at what I do. Now, okay, by now she's worn him down because she's shrewd. And so she wears him down, and he finally says, okay, because she's worn him down, and he doesn't really want it. He negotiates all week long, and he doesn't really want to have to negotiate on his day off. So he turns it over to her, and now she doesn't have to worry about him compartmentalizing his intelligent brain. And everything works out fine. He's happy. He gets the car that he wants. He gets it for less than what he wants. He gets the newer model instead of the older model. And why did everything work well? It worked well is because when you get your ego out of the way, you instantly have an advantage. And she doesn't have to compartmentalize because she doesn't have a big shot job. She just has a regular job. And so it doesn't always work that simply. But when you are not compartmentalizing, when people are strutting around, and I'm not taking it away from her husband. He really does have a reputation as being one of the smartest guys in his industry. It's just that because of their lifestyles, she habitually has to decompartmentalize. And you know, he has to compartmentalize. So compartmentalization makes you vulnerable, whether you realize it or not. If you're humble, you know, the Bible talks about humility because it's true. Pride comes before a fall. So if you if you humble yourself, you won't compartmentalize, which means you're willing to admit to yourself that you don't know everything. And this, yes, you do stick. You are a genius, but you stick the genius part of you into all these compartments in your brain, so you're not effective. And advertising preys on that. It preys on ego. It preys on femininity. It plays on masculinity. They have an entire arsenal. Now, why am I saying all this? Your children and my children and you and your wife or husband or a single mother or whatever, you have been subjected to compartmentalization, indoctrination, social engineering, mind control, advertising, and hypnotic programming your entire life. Now, if you think that you wake up in the morning and you are who you naturally are, you're flat out crazy. You forgot, you've compartmentalized, you've forgotten the fact that all the, you know, big shot ideas you have, all the theories that you believe as the gospel, and all the false belief systems that you have embraced over the years, you didn't arrive at any of these belief systems because you're so smart. You arrived at believing in all these belief systems because you have been indoctrinated repetitively year after year, day after day, for your entire life. And so your ideas are not your own. Your philosophies are not your own. In fact, your moral beliefs are not your own. Your political beliefs are not your own. They are all a product of repetition, conditioning, social engineering, advertising, and things of that nature, which always work on repetition. Now, let's add one final thing that you need to know about, and that is hypnosis. The most famous psychologist in high-powered hypnosis, his name was Milton Erickson. He was the father of what was called conversational hypnosis. So he can talk to, he was famous for being able, his psychologist, he was famous for being able to talk to people from anywhere between 30 and 60 seconds. And he could take the average person within 30 to 60 seconds and put them in a full-blown hypnotic state or even deeper. That means within 30 to 60 seconds, he owned your mind. He could put you in a hypnotic state, and he could embed likes and dislikes in you. He could embed hypnotic belief systems. He could embed political ideologies in you, personal likes and dislikes, all within 30 to 60 seconds. Now, think about this. Many of the most successful politicians and national spokespeople and head of very powerful organizations, many of them have been trained by people just like Milton Erickson, with the same set of gifts as Milton Erickson. And if you attended a conference that he gave, or one of his protégés gave, or saw a television message that he gave, or attended a business seminar or a people skills seminar that he gave, or one of his protégés gave, they had you They owned your mind within, let's say, 30 seconds to 2 minutes. I'll be generous. And so after 30 seconds to 2 minutes, your thoughts, your beliefs were not your own. And so you wonder why really, really smart people consistently cannot see the obvious. They can't see the blatantly obvious. They can't see common sense. And they make the worst decisions in the world. They make idiotic, hypnotic decisions. And in actuality, they can be persuaded hypnotically to believe anything you embed in them. Now, let's expand this even further. So right now, our society runs not the way you think it runs. Our society runs on what Aldous Huxley called the principle of a scientific dictatorship that utilizes scientific mind control. And our society runs on a technological elite that uses technological principles to manage and steer people in the direction they want to go. Our whole society is invisibly governed by social engineers, hypnotic programming people, and all kinds of brain transformation techniques like NLP or neuro-linguistic programming, etc. So what does that mean? It means that the collective consciousness of our society, the group mind of our society, is all plugged into one giant hive mind. And the reason our society as a whole keeps making horrible decisions, immoral decisions, stupid decisions, economically unsound decisions, is because the majority of people are compartmentalizing. They're being manipulated by various forms of hypnotic trances, and they are under various forms of hypnotic trance states. And so the reason they call this a scientific dictatorship is that you don't need guns, you don't need tanks, you don't need jets and bombs. You simply need scientists who are trained in the neurological techniques of persuasion, hypnotic programming, et cetera, et cetera. And that's how you run our entire society. Now, if you ask the question, why is our society continually moving in a worse and worse direction year after year? Why does our society seem to be getting more immoral and more immoral year after year? Why does our society keep moving farther and farther away from biblical values and Judeo-Christian values year after year after year? What is it about America and American society that is causing it? We got all these smart people in American society. So what is it in American society that is causing it to choose a self-destructive pathway? And if we continue to follow this obviously self-destructive pathway, we are going to be taken down from within, we're going to be conquered from within, and we will lose our freedoms, our constitutional rights, our liberties, and everything good about America. So what do we do about this? Because whatever we've been doing for the last 50 to 60 years doesn't work, is counterproductive, and if we keep doing the same dumb things that we've been doing for 50 years, we all know it's guaranteed self-destruction. So anybody who's listening to me, Paul McGuire, and is concerned about our nation and where our nation is headed, or the vaccinations and what the vaccinations imply in terms of the cashless society, etc., we have to mature and wake up, just like a person needs to wake up, just like the person who is in total denial over the fact that they are influenced by television commercials and advertisements. They are influenced by them, and when they watch them repetitively, despite what they say, they go into compartmentalization, and they end up buying and purchasing the very products and services that they say that they hate. These are the exact same products and services that they actually buy. Their refrigerator, their garage is filled with all these products and services. So what does that tell you? What does that tell you? It tells you that the nature of the battle that we're facing in America right now is a battle in which the vast majority of people have no training in how to be victorious in this battle. The vast majority of people are not even aware of the nature of this battle. And so because of that, we're being defeated. We're losing the battle for our nation. And as any of us who are truly Christians that love the Lord, we obviously don't want to be people that are continually going down a downward spiral and continually losing this battle because of compartmentalization and the other things that we mentioned. So we're at a crisis point. We need to learn to use the effective weapons for the warfare and the battle that we're in. If we don't, we're going to be overcome and defeated, because our back is up against the wall. So we can continue on doing the same old thing, and we will be viciously defeated by our own pride, our own compartmentalization, or we can discipline ourselves to learn the more effective and more sophisticatedly effective, newer techniques of warfare. And that's the place where God has brought us to. We're losing the battle. So let's put it out there two ways. The first reason we're losing the battle is we are not knowledgeable in fighting the battle and using the weapons that God has given us that will actually win. So in order for us to win the battle that we're in, we have to recognize first and foremost that our fight is not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities, the powers, the dark unseen forces of wickedness in heavenly places. Once we recognize that the battle is being fought on a battlefield that we have not been trained in, especially Christian pastors and seminaries and Christian high schools and colleges, all these people need to get up to speed fast. You're equipping. I'm not trying to pick on you, but look, I'm going to tell you the way it is, not out of arrogance, but because I can't. If your ego is too big to hear it, and if my ego is so fragile that I have such a desperate need to be liked by you that I'm going to lie to you, so that you'll like me instead of really telling you the truth so you can win the battle. We're both messed up. So this is how it has to work. We have to know the right battlefield, for the weapons of our warfare are mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. They're spiritual. The weapons of our warfare are spiritual and mighty through God to the pulling down strongholds. So we need to understand that first and foremost, the battle we're fighting is a spiritual battle. That means, because it's a spiritual battle, that means that it is both a spiritual battle and a psychological and mental battle. Remember, a spiritual battle always integrates itself with a psychological, subconscious, mental battle. They weave in and out of one another. So if you're marching along, learning to fight a battle that the Vikings fought, you're not going to do very well coming up against the U.S. Air Force. It's just not going to happen. So you have to be trained, and you have to go to places that are knowledgeable about what you need to be trained in. So you need to be trained, first and foremost, in high-level spiritual warfare, such as intercessory prayer, fasting, repentance, and the other dynamics of intercessory prayer warfare. Then you need to understand the psychological dimension of the psychological warfare that we're involved in, because the psychological warfare interfaces itself with the spiritual warfare. And you have to know the basics. So, let's put it this way. We talked about advertising. As long as you are easily manipulated, and as long as you're easily exploited into buying all kinds of things or spending all kinds of money by people who know advertising techniques and selling techniques, etc., as long as you're easily manipulated, you're going to be easily conquered, and so will your children. Now, when it comes to the psychological warfare dynamic in the battle, when you are no longer an easy psychological prey that can be dominated, taken over, controlled, when you're not an easy psychological prey where your enemy can easily embed in you entire ideologies, entire religious belief systems, entire thinking modalities, ideological beliefs, moral beliefs, etc., etc. As long as you easily succumb to psychological warfare, as long as you easily succumb due to compartmentalization to a hypnotic programmable state, we're going to lose our nation, we're going to lose our children, we're going to not accomplish the mission that Christ has for us. This is not all that complex. It simply requires a regular minimal input of training and skill development as both a spiritual warrior and a psychological warrior. So let me close with this one thing. And I know it's taking it up to a higher level, but if you understand this one thing, you'll also understand that the psychological and spiritual warfare that we're in is a winnable war. And it could be won, literally. We could listen to me, within less than a year, we could turn the spiritual war and the psychological war for our nation, we could turn it around 180 degrees, and instead of losing this war, we could be winning this war within less than a year by simply applying the psychological warfare techniques and the spiritual warfare techniques that one can easily learn. So let's just throw it out there. But it's your job to think about it and apply it. I'm not going to do everything for you. Okay, so this is how it plays out. In psychological warfare, all the advertising geniuses, all the scientific mind control geniuses, propaganda geniuses, all the human behavioral experts, all the geniuses in transforming human behavior around the same time in history, 1920s to 1930s, made the same discovery. And here it is. I talk about this a great deal in my book, Power from On High. What all these geniuses learned was that there's something that geniuses all have in common, regular people all have in common, the ordinary man has all in common, and compartmentalized super brain people all have in common. And this is what they all have in common. No matter their intelligence, their genius, their compartmentalization, and how super bright they are, no matter all of those factors, all people, high and low on the scale, all people that you'll ever meet have the same Achilles heel. And this is the Achilles heel that all people have. All people, without exception, want to be totally accepted by, approved by, and affirmed by whatever they perceive to be as the in-group, society's norm group, the most popular group, the coolest group, the highest level group. All people in a social structure have the same basic need. They all want to be affirmed, approved by the high-level social group. Always. And they will show their need for their approval by the highest level group in society. If you look at their behavior, they'll reveal to you what's motivating them. They will begin to use the language of the in-group. They'll dress like the in-group. They'll have the political views of the in-group, the sexual morals of the in-group, the religious beliefs or non-beliefs of the in-group. In every society, all the masses, high and low, will modify their behavior, modify their dress, transform themselves so that other people in society perceive them on a subconscious level as part of that in-group, as part of that upper level or elite group, and they will do everything they can to modify their behavior, their talk and speech, so they think, act, talk like the ultimate cool group or in-group. Just like in high school, you wanted to be part of the cool group. Now, once you understand that dynamic, you have more power than 99.9% of the people on planet Earth, because you've learned that the most effective way of controlling people, changing the direction of a mass population, changing the belief systems of a people, it always comes down to the same exact thing. All people want to be affirmed, applauded, look like, act like, dress like, talk like, have the same religious beliefs like, think like, exactly like the in group, like the cool group. And they'll do anything they need to get you to think that they're part of that in-group, because what they're really all about most of the day is modifying their behavior, their belief system, and everything else, so they act in conformity to the in-group and the cool group. And so Hitler knew this. Dictators have known this. Rock star promoters known this. This is how you mobilize the masses by the millions. This is how the Beatles were marketed and sold. So, you can, if you're paying attention and you're praying, and if you're perceiving yourself as one of God's spiritual soldiers, you can begin to subtly, repetitively, and on a regular basis embed into the mass culture embedded advertising messages, if you will. You can begin to embed messages, just like seeds, that will subtly change the flow and direction of our culture by seeding the people you know, seeding them with ideas and beliefs that are new. So what you're going to do is you're going to subtly use your influence, subtly, to embed in the people you know, the people at work. You're going to embed subtly belief systems, new ideas, new morals, new attitudes. You're going to subtly embed those belief systems in all the people you know. And you're going to do that wherever you go. But it's got to be subtle. There has to be a pacing. If you're going to go around bombarding everybody with your belief systems, it's going to backfire. You have to strategically, methodically, and with mathematical precision, seed the mind, the subconscious minds of the people you know. And there's nothing immoral, there's nothing unethical in this. You're not hypnotizing people. What you're doing is, wake up, what you're doing is you're using the same spiritual warfare techniques that the devil has been using to conquer America for 50 years, but now you're turning it around on him. Turning it around on him. And it's not hard. It's not hard. Especially because you have social media and you have the internet at your disposal. And in a very short period of time, you can turn the direction of the spiritual battle. And America will no longer be in free fall. It will no longer be in despondency, chaos, and confusion. The demonic powers will not be running this nation. The people of God, using psychological warfare and spiritual warfare, will be running this nation. Your kids will no longer be running you. You will be running your kids. And just to give you an idea of the overwhelming power, the overwhelming energy, the overwhelming idea system that this opens up for you. What I've just shared with you, and this is not for the purpose of boasting, this is for the purpose of motivating you. What I've just shared with you is a principle that is so powerful, so transformational, that it has the power to totally rebuild and change your world, and it has the power to totally rebuild and change your children's world and to change the world you live in. It can actually change the world you live in. God bless you. This is Paul McGuire. Do it. Visit paulmcguire.us. That's paulmcguire.us.